What are recognised supervisory bodies then? Recognised supervisory bodies are appointed by the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. So basically, they are appointed by the government. A recognised supervisory body has got to have its own rules to ensure that, first of all, individuals hold qualifications from a recognised qualifying body. I'll come back to that one in a moment. Secondly, that firms are controlled by qualified people. And thirdly, that they have rules to ensure that only certain members can audit. Okay, so it's only firms appointed by a recognised supervisory body that can actually be auditors. What's a recognised qualifying body? Because we said that individuals must hold qualifications from a recognised qualifying body. A recognised qualifying body is a body appointed by the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment again, and most recognised supervisory bodies are also recognised qualifying bodies. So if you are a member of the ACCA, then you are a member of a recognised supervisory body, and the ACCA is also a recognised qualifying body, so it can offer qualifications that are recognised for you to be able to become an auditor. So let's go back to the Auditing Practices Board. We said that the Auditing Practices Board sets the standards for auditors, and the Auditing Practices Board has one overarching standard, and that's the International Standard on Quality Control. Now, sitting below that International Standard on Quality Control, the APB has a number of sets of rules. It has sets of rules for auditors and sets of rules for reporting accountants. I want to focus on the sets of rules for auditors. Sets of rules for auditors are overseen by what's called the Auditor's Code. And I'm going to come back and have a look at details of the Auditor's Code in a moment. And sitting below the Auditor's Code are two basic sets of rules that the auditor has to follow. First of all, as we've already mentioned, there are the international standards on auditing. And those international standards on auditing are supplemented by practice notes that the APB issues from time to time to help infill areas of detail for the auditor or help explain items in more detail for the auditor. Sitting alongside the international standards on auditing is the auditor's ethical standard. And I'm going to have a look at details of that ethical standard in a moment as well. So now I'm going to look at the Auditor's Code and the Auditor's ethical standards in a little bit of detail. The Auditor's Code then. The key principles covered in the Auditor's Code are as follows. First of all, the principle of accountability. The auditor is accountable to the primary stakeholder. Secondly, there's the principle of integrity. This includes the requirement of confidentiality. Thirdly, there's the principle of objectivity and independence. Fourthly, the principle of competence. That is that the auditor should understand the financial reporting and business issues of the client. Next, there's the principle of rigour. That means that the auditor must be thorough in the work that he carries out. Next, the principle of judgment. So the auditor has to take account of materiality. That is, the auditor must pay attention to significant items. And what is significant will have required the auditor's judgment in the first instance. Next, there's a principle of clarity. The auditor must ensure clear, complete, and effective communication. Next, the principle of association. As an auditor, you should only allow your reports to be presented alongside non-reported information if you consider the other information not to conflict with the audited information. And lastly, there's the principle of providing value. The audit should provide value to the client. What about the ethical standards? So the ethical standards give us more detail on what's required in the auditor's code. These ethical standards are written in a discursive way. They're not intended to give you a list of absolute do's and don'ts. They simply point out to you where Your behaviour or the behaviour of your client may lead others to think that you are behaving unethically. I'm now going to go through some of the titles of the key ethical standards and then give you a couple of examples at the end that cover some of the ground in these ethical standards. First of all, there's the standard of integrity, objectivity, and independence. Next, the standard of financial, business, employment, and personal relationships. Next, the standard on long association with the audit engagement. Then a standard on fees, gifts, hospitality, etc. Then a standard on non-audit services, and finally a standard on smaller entities and dealing with those smaller entities. So those standards cover a number of different situations that the auditor could become involved with, and they give the auditor guidance in dealing with those situations. So for example, the second one I mentioned there, financial, business, employment, and personal relationships, would cover what is and what isn't acceptable in terms of your business relationships with your audit client. The third one I mentioned there, the long association with the audit engagement, how long is acceptable for an auditor to have a client for? How many consecutive years should the auditor be associated with the client for? All of these standards are quite detailed and they give guidance that points out when there may be an ethical issue. What they don't give you are clear-cut rules on what you should or shouldn't do. They simply point out where you may have an issue. I'm going to give you a couple of examples now. First of all, let's say we have a guy called John. John has been recruited to sit on the board of Jackson and Company PLC. So John's been recruited to sit on the board of Jackson and Company PLC. John was previously a partner in Jackson's auditors, Haynes and Wilson. My question to you is, can Haynes and Wilson still remain as auditors of Jackson and Company? So John was recruited to sit on the board of Jackson and Company PLC. John was previously a partner in Jackson's auditors, Haynes and Wilson. Can Haynes and Wilson still remain as the auditors of Jackson and Company PLC? You may want to turn the podcast off for a moment and think about this. And I'll give you the answer when you turn back on. Okay, so what's the solution to that dilemma? Well, John is now a director of a client of the firm. According to the ethical standard on financial, business, employment and personal relationships, the position will depend on whether John was the engagement partner on the audit in the 2 years preceding his joining the client. If he was, then the firm will need to resign and not re-engage with the client for at least 2 years. If this wasn't the case, so John wasn't the engagement partner, then the firm can continue to act. They should ensure, however, that there are no significant connections remaining between John and the audit team. Okay, let's have a look at another one. Let's say this time that Jackie is a director of Myers Watson PLC. That's Jackie, a director of Myers Watson PLC. She's a chartered accountant and has a number of years of experience of financial accounting systems. And as a result of this, she's been recruited as a partner in Myers Watson's auditors, who are called Wilson and Company. So Jackie's gone from a client company called Myers Watson to the client company's auditors, Wilson and Company. So the question is, can Wilson and Company continue to act as the auditors of Myers Watson? And again, you might want to turn the podcast off for a few moments and think about this. And when you turn back on, I'll give you the solution. Okay, the solution to this one is that as a former director of the client, Jackie should have no connection with the audit firm for 2 years. The firm can, however, remain as auditors if this happens. So there you go. There's a little bit of guidance that comes out of the ethical standard. What you may find is that you may have a dilemma in practice and you read through the ethical standards and your particular dilemma isn't covered by the ethical standard. What the ethical standard does is it gives you a number of different situations that you may come across and gives you advice and guidance on what you may or may not want to do. It gives you benchmarks for what may or may not be considered acceptable. The ethical standards, though, do not give you absolutes. The ethical standards don't say, normally, that you can do this or that you can't do that. They give you guidance for how you should behave. Okay, that's the end of this podcast looking at audit regulation in the United Kingdom. What this podcast has covered is the current structure of auditing and accounting regulation in the United Kingdom. It's covered an introduction to international standards on auditing and how they've impacted on the United Kingdom. And it's also had a quick review of the Auditor's Code and Ethics. My name's Steve Carlisle. Thank you very much for listening.